This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on treasury, liquidity and risk. Now, our topic today, everyone, is entitled Payment versus Payment, or PVP, and their role in enhancing liquidity management. So it's all about cross-border payments and the challenges they can bring. Welcome to our audience today. Morning, good afternoon and evening, wherever you may be. And I can already see from the attendance list, we have a record number today. So thanks for attending today. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through. If you put it in the comments sections, which is to the right of the video, you can see, and I can take some of these as we go, or I can leave some to the end. We have 30 minutes for today. If you ask a question, if you could let us know who you are and if possible your role, that would be great. Now, I'm joined today by our guest speaker, Nick Miles from RTGS Global. Nick, welcome. Would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Nev. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on. So Nick Miles, I work for a company called RTGS Global. Hopefully a few people on the call already know me, so I'll be familiar to them. But for those that don't know me or my company, so RTGS Global, just a new settlement platform for interbank wholesale foreign exchange and cross-border payments. My background is I spent about 19 years in different investment banks, specifically on the intraday cash and liquidity management side. So, you know, I know Planix fairly well from my my days of old as well.
Brilliant. Welcome, Nick. Now, I normally ask our guests if you have any football allegiances to start this off. But I know from when we met earlier, you've got quite a story. We've already got half an hour. So if you want to squeeze it into 30 seconds, that'd be great for everyone to hear.
I'll keep it short and I won't bore people, but I guess before I got into the world of banking, I was a professional footballer. Going back in time, I grew up in Bournemouth, but supported Aston Villa. At the age of 15, I then signed for Aston Villa. So I, you know, signing for your childhood club, I'm sure you know, you and Liverpool never would have been a dream, but whatever reason, it didn't work out. And then I went off to the States, did my college over there, came back and turned pro after I graduated. So I did things the wrong way around. And then Bournemouth released me after a few months. And then, I kind of, you know, lost a bit of interest in football, and that's why I joined the banking world, because lived in Bournemouth, JP Morgan were headquartered there. It seemed like a natural fit, and that's how I kind of started in my banking journey. So,
wow, fantastic. I was captain of my school team, but let's not talk about after that. So on the subject of today, look, previously we've spoken about liquidity, why you should take it seriously, the regulators, what you require both in the buy side and sell side. But a common theme we continue to talk about is the speed in which payments and liquidity moves. And what's interesting, as you know, Nick, is the rise of new FMIs and market utilities that are looking to address or help with specific needs considering this, and one of them being your company. So, and then, how PVP can help enhance liquidity overall. So, like always, it's probably useful to start by explaining, you know, what do we mean by PVP and why is it important?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a term in payments, you'll hear it a lot, certainly in cross-border payments. It happens in domestic payment systems, but it's kind of a hidden, happens in the background. You know, faster payments, if I pay you, Neville, you get it instantly, I get debited instantly. What happens in the background is a different story, but in the cross-border space, payment versus payment is quite simple that you've got two legs of an exchange here. So, for example, you've got sterling and euros. One leg will only settle if the other leg settles at the same time. So it's effectively, that's where the payment versus payment, it's that instant certainty that you'll only get your sterling if I get my euros at the same time. It's that simple. It's not that simple, as you know, if you go into the details and logistics, but that at the very high level, that's what it is. And just to expand on that, in the advent of blockchain and, you know, blockchain and DLT getting bigger and bigger and more relevant in the world, you'll hear a concept of atomic settlement. And that is very similar. That's an instant and simultaneous exchange of either an asset or a fund. So again, you've got the certainty, for example, a trade will either settle or it will fail. There's no chance of one side going without the other. So I just wanted to explain atomic settlement because it is becoming more relevant in the market as well.
Got to understand. So like, how does that differ, I guess, from normal FX settlements? What are the...
So today in FX, you've got, I guess, the majorly traded currency pairs in the world settled through a PVP mechanism called CLS. It's been there since the late 90s. It is in the advent of the Hurstadt event back in the, I think, the 70s or 80s. But that is there for 18 currency. It works very well today. You know, it's what every major banking institution uses, whether you're a direct or an indirect member of that. But they are, you know, limited to the 18 currencies currently. And I guess because of some of the regional pressures, whether it be regulatory or legal driven, you know, we know that the CPMI, for example, which is the Committee of Payments and Market Infrastructure, are calling for private and public sector collaboration to increase and enhance PVP coverage. And what that typically means is that has got a real focus on the emerging markets. But if you think about it, you could do a dollar trade against a non-CLS currency, that will have to settle outside of CLS. And I think in the dawn of these emerging markets really starting to emerge, and I don't, you know, that's a play on words, but they're getting bigger, commerce is growing, you know, I think the remittances in cross-border space by 2030 are going to be in the hundreds of trillions of dollars. So it's a big old space to play in. And I think PVP, we're effectively not just RTS Global, but others, we're a call to arms to a lot of the public and industry bodies saying, where we can, banks and financial institutions should start to settle on a payment versus payment basis.
Got it. Okay. So, look, I understand there's risks in this, but that's the same for all things. Plus, I expect the fails rate to be fairly high. But, you know, so why, or they have now, so why the push for PVP now? How does it help liquidity management more specifically?
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of it's around that kind of certainty. I think I call it hope versus certainty. If you're settling on a payment versus payment basis, you know almost there and then, have I got my leg of the exchange or not? Like I said earlier, it either happens or it doesn't. I think if you can bilaterally deal with a counterparty versus, I guess, the traditional model where you could use an agent, a third party, an intermediary, in that chain of events, you're very almost, not blind, that's the wrong word, but the transparency of where am I in the payment chain? You know, I'm expecting X and I've sent Y. There's that certainty, where am I going to receive those funds and when? And I think often you don't know. Some of the more emerging markets, you're trading against, you know, a hard currency versus a different currency. You're very reliant on your network of banks or partners you're dealing with in a certain jurisdiction. So you've got that reliance and trust. I mean, typically you deal with a trusted partner, but it's that very much, okay, I've got to hope this turns up, because if money doesn't arrive into a certain account, you've got that onward knock-on effect of, well, that money coming in was to do something, money going out. And when, I mean, I've lived and breathed this, when you're waiting on a back of an FX settling outside of CLS, there's no worse feeling than the traders throwing you up going, look, where's that money? Because this is blocking XYZ settlement onward. And it's similar in the securities world. You know, when you fail to receive a security to onward deliver it, you really block a whole chain of events. So it's just that real bilateral dealing, more certainty and more transparency, which goes back to what the cross-border roadmap is trying to solve for in the first place.
Got it, and less risk as well. Okay, so understand that. Surely, though, this has been around for some time, Nick. So is there a reason we haven't seen a push for PVC previously? Is it because, you know, CLS hasn't been willing to expand into the other currencies? Or what's the reason for it kind of now?
I think partly, I mean, going back, it's already three and a half years away, the G20 and the Financial Stability Board put literally a cross-border payments roadmap in place going out to 2027. And if you rewind to 2020, 7 years seems like a long time, but the reality is we're already halfway through that journey. So I think it was that public push to really recognize that the way the world is going in global commerce, and maybe partly the pandemic played a part here with the digitalization, more people paying digitally versus, you know, in hard traditional cash. But when these bodies saying, look, there's got to be mechanisms where you can increase the adoption of PVP outside of what works well today, using, you know, technology, innovation, but also there's a big push on that public and private collaboration. You know, these fintechs such as ourselves, we've got the technology, but equally we need the public bodies to support us and almost take us on a journey with them to, you know, to say, look, this is fit for purpose and this is what we think we can help with the market.
Got it. Just two quick fire questions we've been asked, Nick, if that's okay. Hope I get the names right here. Dan Fearney, is RippleNet helping or hindering real-time cross-border in terms of liquidity and settlement?
I think a bit of both. I mean, obviously, Ripple is, let's call it token-based. But I think we'll probably touch on this a bit later, Nev, about interoperability, you know, different exchanges where, you know, we talked to several financial institutions, and I think that the terminology on-off ramps coming up where, you know, I've got, for example, I've got crypto or a stable coin or a token, and I want to switch it into fiat. So I've got the on-ramp. How do I get that off? And I think we talked about, you know, whether called it a liquidity bridge or, you know, interoperability with other payment mechanism or exchanges. And I think Ripple are doing a great job. And I think, you know, they've done huge things. And, you know, I think the reality is if you go into London, you go on the tube, Ripple is everywhere. And to me, that's quite a big statement. So I think to Dan's question, it's certainly helping with liquidity. And it's also, it's answering a use case, right? I mean, I think people really want to use some people want to use a stabilized version, whether a token or a stable coin, for example. That is becoming a real form of a value of payment. What we do is very much fiat to fiat, so currency to currency, but, you know, certainly future proofing to accept, you know, to be able to swap a fiat into an XRP or a CBDC or a stablecoin.
Sure, got it. And also a quick one, I think you may have answered, but from Heba Chamas, is there an opportunity for CLS to open up to other currencies? So is there a timeline on that? Is it going to open up for emerging markets? And how would that impact BVP?
Yeah, I mean, I can answer so much, but I think, look, they're open to, I mean, they've got other products where you can settle outside of the 18, but not on a almost like a true payment versus payment basis.
Got it.
And I think, look, there's an industry, you know, there's an industry working together to really say, look, there is optionality out there. We're not the only ones. We know that there's others. You know, we've been recognized on a short list of about 9 or 10 as part of the CPMI paper about, you know, this company could help with adoption of PPP settlement. So certainly I think it's that, you know, working as an industry, not in silos, working together to really make sure we're solving a real life issue, not
solve
just
a problem.
Nice to have. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it. Understand. So look, to get to the point of the podcast and how PVP can help or enhance with liquidity management. Now, we often hear from our customers, prospects, liquidity managers don't really like things that move or happen quickly, like instant payments. So do you have a view on that or explain the difference in your world?
Yeah, I think the reality is, I think the way that it's happened in domestic payment systems, I mean, I looked earlier today, there's now over 60 instant domestic payment systems, and I think over 3/4 of them are now 24/7. And I think that's the way the world's going. You know, we know for a fact that a typical working week on average is a Monday to Friday, let's call it a 9 to 5. But I think consumers are now demanding both real time and more instant payments. And I think at a consumer level, even though look, we talk at a wholesale level up here, at a consumer level, that's what drives a lot of the wholesale activity. And I think if consumers are starting to demand that, typically and indirectly, that comes through the commercial banks that then goes back up to the central banks, and they have to listen to, we would like to the optionality of settling outside of the core operating hours. And I think the world is becoming more real time. I mean, it's a very simple statement, but if you Google something, you get immediate results. When you pay in domestic currency to a domestic currency, that happens instantly. And I appreciate we're talking about cross-border payments, but really the mechanisms aren't that different behind the scenes. It's just a lot of it's about the regulation, the legal framework, the settlement finality. I.e., if I source a currency, I need absolute assurance that I can then use that for onward domestic payments.
Got it. Okay, I understand. And you touched on real time, but in turn, you know, from what we do in Planex, everything's real time. As soon as a transaction comes in, we do everything. I presume that's true with your platform, and it's almost mandatory for you, but it's really important to lower that risk of a gap between A happening and B happening, right?
Yeah, and I think with the technology, with the APIs, the amount of data that can move at the speed of light, literally, is quite scary. You know, we're talking of hundreds of thousands of transactions potentially in milliseconds. And I think when we talk about instant, again, I'll go back to some of my banking conversations. Instant doesn't have to mean like literally now. Instant could be in a few minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour. It's still kind of better than waiting for a day or 2 days forward. How a lot of the FX activity happens, you know, you trade typically on a spot basis. So we trade today, we settle in 2 days' time. But yeah, the real-time data, and going back to, you know, reality that, you know, which is your baby, Neville, right? It's that, how can I take real-time data and really start to use it, not just from what are my balances across the world in certain liquidity pools, but how can I use that data and start to help you make an informed decisions about, well, this, normally this counterparty pays me during this time frame, but they're now 4 hours late on an average basis. And real being analytics pushing to the user versus having to like dive in and try and find stuff. Because I think from my experience, I mean, I spent a lot of my career looking for problems, and they form the basis of my day, i.e. what's not happened. I don't really care about what's happened, and I don't mean that flippantly. what's happened has happened and settled, and that forms my cash balance. But it's the what's not happened that will cause you sleepless nights and a lot of operational pain.
Yeah, I think you touched on something there about data, right? We realized over the years that the data that we end up holding is just as important as the process that we allow treasury and risk managers to operate. So what you can do with it after the fact in near real time, there's a plethora of things you can do. I guess that's also true for you as well. So you're solving a problem, but the data you've eventually held about the payments, you could use that for all kinds of purposes.
Absolutely. And I think we're starting to, you know, talk to certain banks about what they call smart contracts. So almost, you know, these smart contracts get appended to a payment instruction, and they almost are rule based to say, if I do a trade with counterparty X in this currency settling against account Z, it needs to settle in an agreed time frame. And that goes into a lot more detail about rule books and participation between, you know, counterparties. But it's really those smart contracts that dictate that you could trade like almost now and settle very shortly based on a rule set. And again, it's all API driven. You know, API to API calls are very, you know, I'm not a technologist, but we know that if you speak to a technologist, it's like, yeah, that's no problem at all. You know, APIs are really driving us, and particularly with real-time data.
Good. I was just about to ask my next question, but Planix has asked it for me in the comments. So it's about 24/7. So the Bank of England has again looked at the operating hours. If they get close to 24/7, what does that mean for a proposition like RTGS Global?
Well, I think it kind of aligns to how we'd like to operate.
Yeah.
You know, they've been looking at this as part of their, you know, their payment scheme going forward. But yeah, I mean, if you can align, the more systems you can align on the same operating hours, it makes it easier. That's my personal opinion, because think about it. You could be dealing with any currency in the world, but if you've got the ability to settle on a 24/7 basis, it then really expands your opportunities. If you've got sterling, you can now settle against a currency in APAC, for example, who are also operating on a 24/7 basis. I think as long as the liquidity is available and it's there to be able to settle where you need it to be settled, then why not? But equally, 24/7, it demands a kind of a change, right? Because a lot of people aren't used to it. I think certainly on the retail and consumer bit, 24/7 is becoming the norm, but certainly cross-border payments, it's gonna be a change. It's not gonna happen overnight. And I think it's gonna be that journey of, okay, what does it mean? What does it mean for us? What's needed from a technology perspective? And also from an infrastructure play, because it's not just you don't just plug in and you're ready to go. It's not that simple. But certainly I think the way the world's going, I think a 24/7 world is a reality, maybe not tomorrow, but it certainly will be in the future.
And do you see in the future customers who use CLS for those main currencies moving to platforms like yours as well? Because I don't know whether you're quicker to innovate or you bring out new features, but can you see that happening as well? So it's not just for these extra currencies.
Also I think, look, we've always said we're optionality, right? If you need to do something, whether it's called, you know, just in time funding or on-demand liquidity, if you've got the optionality where you've got liquidity in a certain liquidity pool and you can use that for a cross-border transaction, then absolutely optionality. But we're realists. We're not expecting the market to suddenly overnight go, right, let's change all of our flows from here to here. That's not going to happen, right? And that's not how the banking world works. But certainly we do believe we have a part to play with that optionality piece, that, you know, ability to, if you want to trade now and settle now, you certainly can. So, yeah.
Got it. And you mentioned there was like 9 or 10 players, or there was a list. Do you see the market consolidating? Do you think there'll be, you know, is this in the future whether there's 100 platforms like yours, or do you think it will consolidate to just a few?
Yeah, I think.
I know you don't have a crystal ball, right? But
yeah, well, no, I think that 9 or 10 is realistic. Whether we'll all be successful, you know, TBD, right? But 100, absolutely not, because it's very difficult to show what goes on behind the scenes in terms of the build, the conversations, you know, the discussions with the central banks, making sure you've got the commercial bank interest. I certainly absolutely agree a few absolutely will be successful. But also for them to be successful, I think we need to talk about interoperability, because what we're trying to do is help with liquidity here. I think if we all go off and do our own thing and start to form our own little nuanced payment systems, if they don't talk to each other in the future, we could actually be fragmenting liquidity. You know, if then it could be have that trapped liquidity in certain payment systems. So that interoperability piece, I won't mention names, but we spoke to other payment systems, and we're all fairly open to it. It's not as simple as going, "Do you want to do it?" Yeah, there's legal frameworks and rule books, etc. But absolutely, it needs to happen, and I think it's part of the CPMI and the roadmap to say, even interlinking of payment systems, right? It's part of there's 19 building blocks, and obviously won't go into them, but it's part of that paper to say, even the interlinking of domestic payment systems, that has to happen, because it's one of the most obvious things to do to increase liquidity outreach for cross-border payments.
Got it. And from a technology integration point of view, because we get asked this all of the time, is this to kind of switch on your platform or other platforms? Is it relatively straightforward? Is it API driven? What's the tech?
So we're API first. It's JSON standard. So look, for me, like I said, I'm not a technologist, but I understand enough that the way that APIs are going, it is the integration. We're not talking like if you think about a traditional banking infrastructure taking potentially months or years to put in, the initial integration, the very first iteration of that can take less than an hour. That's not the full package, but that's the first point into our network. And then you've got add-ons. But the APIs are making things just so much quicker, factually.
No, it is. You're absolutely right. And you may not be able to answer this, Nick, but is this, in terms of what you're trying to achieve here, 24/7, real time, millions of transactions, payments, is it a big tech challenge for you and for the platform providers? How much of a mountain is that to climb?
I think for us, technology, we can handle the load. It's not a problem. We've proved it. We tested it. The adoption, increasing outreach, and then again, going back to interoperability, how systems would work each other, I think that's still to be determined. But certainly, I think a lot of cloud-based solutions, they're built for, they're resilient, they're secure, and they're very safe. And they're built to take huge, huge amounts of data and payload through them. So I don't see that as a blocker. I really don't.
Got it. Understand. Okay, I've got one more question here. And it's, if we have more utilities, then do you feel the regulators and the system operators will start to have a concern over visibility of flows, e.g. these are taken away from T2 chapter others? I think, we've had this theme throughout podcasts we have, is what's the regulators' view in this? So is this a good thing for them? Should this concern them? Is it a challenge for them? And do they have to broaden their scope? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've got probably a twofold answer. I mean, firstly, regulators are open to sit down and talk and listen, because it's part of their role, part of their role within the infrastructure and the payments world. It's, I guess you could say they're the top of the tree. They're a big part of it. So I think they're open to it. It's what we're finding is, and we're talking to multiple central banks globally. There's no one central bank is the same. And the same as a commercial bank, you could say, I think I know how that bank will be very similar to that bank. You can't assume anything, right? And it's just being respectful of what they do today, and also their future roadmap and strategy, and what's driving them to really look at cross-border payments. But I think for us, we're saying that we've still got a big part to play in terms of domestic payments. So you could source liquidity within our network and make onward payments via domestic payment rails. So still going through Target 2 CHAPS. So we don't say, we really don't think we're taking flow away. We could actually be increasing flow through domestic payment systems.
Yeah, and I think with regulators, that whilst in our field, their view of what's important is, it's pretty much the same across the world, but some of the interpretations vary slightly. It's the speed at which they talk to banks about what's important, the reporting they want. You can have a peak or a spike after an event like last year with Silicon Valley Bank. So it varies, even though ultimately they're trying to do the same thing, whether it's Fed or PRA or whoever. But you might get more scrutiny on that in the future.
Yeah, like I said, they play a hugely important part, and they have to do the right thing. That they can't rush into decisions. They have to be very formulated and say, why are we doing this? And effectively, are we supporting our wider community, which is their role? And this goes into fiscal, monetary policy, etc., etc. So it's not a simple task. I mean, it looks simple on paper, but when you get into the weeds, it can be very complex.
Got it. Understand. Another question here from Dan. What impact is weaponization and sanctioning have on cross-border payments? From the US dollar to the BRIC consortia? Challenging times geopolitically for the future of money. That's a great question.
It's a great question.
The world's changing, right? So, exactly. Yeah.
I can't talk so much about the sanctions, but I think the whole BRICS concept, and for those, you know, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Yeah. It's a really interesting one because you've now got those five nations almost working together. And I think the initial plan was, can we come up with our own currency? That is a very big challenge just because of multiple reasons, right?
Yeah.
But equally, when you've got five such powerful nations sitting down, almost like multilaterally agreeing to do something with each other, there's probably something in that. And I think that will then go back into the sanctions of what does it mean? Could they push forward with a common currency? I personally think, against my personal view, I think that's quite a difficult challenge. And the sanctions, I think a lot of the sanctions stuff is still on banks themselves to deal with. You know, it's your risk appetite, right? You know, you go through huge amounts of due diligence with KYC and AML. The sanctions piece, yeah, I mean, with the BRICS, maybe they have their own agreement and the rest of the world sits outside of it. I think that's all I can really say.
Yeah, what you're trying to do is take down barriers to making payments happen and the risk of a payment versus a payment. And what you don't want to see, right, is there's one set of platforms for one part of the world, another for the other, and they don't meet in the middle, and it's, you know, it just brings in more risk.
Agreed. And I think we've all got to speak a common language at the end of the day in the payments world, right? We're all trying out there to do our best and to make things better. And more feasible and more scalable. Yeah.
Okay. So look, we're coming close to the end now. So just to close off, considering now that we understand what PVP is and the value it can bring, what's needed to make it a success market wide?
I think
nice closing question for you there, Nick.
Yeah. there's probably two or three things. I think there is, like I said, we're several companies are responding to this call to arms from the industry bodies. You know, I think we do have to work together. Obviously, we're all working on our own thing, but equally, I think we can become more of a community and really push back to these industry bodies that we've all got viable solutions, but equally, we need support and maybe backing from whether it be a supranational or, you know, the commercial banks we talk to, because, you know, they like the idea. How do we push this forward? And I think, you know, if you look at the European space, at payments next year, you know, you've got to have an instant payment solution by, I think, mid-2025. Cross-border payments, the 2027 roadmap, it's got at the end of that 2027, is there a, I think it's every bank has got to have one option to do cross-border payment within a certain time frame or have the access to a certain currency corridor. So it's that optionality and how we get there. And I think it really is that industry working all together, whether it be central banks, commercial banks, private entities like ourselves, but really starting to work together to say, what are we trying to solve for and how are we going to get there?
Understand. Thank you for interesting thanks from people in the audience today. Look, Nick, love to talk more. I thought cross-border payments years ago was pretty straightforward and easy. It's not. It's a challenge and it's a big one for the industry. So thanks for sharing your views today. Fortunately, we have run out of time. If anyone wants to ask some more questions, please ask them even after the event and we can respond to them later. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Look out for that. Thank you very much, everyone who joined today. Look out for our next podcast, which is becoming in March. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in today, and goodbye.
Thanks, all.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.